Hello. Can everyone hear me? Good. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the first afternoon session on the first day of SPC here. My name's Saurabh Bhatia. Let's see. Ah, come on, clicker. I guess I have to use the mouse. So this is the Get Started Developing Apps for Office and SharePoint session. I'm a program manager. I work on Visual Studio, so all the developer tools that you see in Visual Studio, that's the team I work on. As part of it, I also work on the Visual Studio Napa Services tools, and if you haven't heard of that, that's what I'm going to be talking about today, too. So really excited to share some of the new things that we have in the tools for that. But what this session is really about is really a getting started experience, right? So it's about bootstrapping you, making you, helping you understand what the new cloud app model is really all about from the developer perspective, and then helping you build these apps. So we'll have lots of demos that start building apps for Office, apps for SharePoint, a new template that we have in Visual Studio for building cloud business apps, some of which you saw at the keynote. And then once we've built this app, we'll actually take it and talk about how you can publish it out and get it to either the App Store or the App Catalog. All right, so that's what I have in store for you, and then there's lots of demos and lots of code to show you. It's a dev track after all, right? So before we kind of dig in, let's kind of do a quick recap of kind of the broad picture. We saw some version of this slide already this morning when we are talking about developing for the Office 365 platform. There's really three pillars that we have. The first one is the contextual app, where you're extending the capabilities of the rich client, Excel, Word, Outlook, or SharePoint itself, and showing up your content inside those apps. The second pillar is about having robust APIs, so you can have a website that's sitting on its own, or a device app that's sitting on its own, and it's just accessing APIs inside Office 365 to get a richer experience in that device app or website. And third, of course, is the flexible tools, which is something that we work on. So for this talk, I'm going to be focused on the first part, which is the contextual apps and the tools that we have to help you build those contextual apps. Right? There's other talks out there, and there's related sessions that I have at the end that go into details about the other side. But this talk is really about building those contextual apps. So let's dig into those contextual apps, and let's talk about the cloud app model. Again, this might seem a little bit like repeating, but I'm going to put it out there in case you missed the dev keynote. What's the app model all about, right? It's about building the benefits that we all know and recognize about apps on devices to the place where enterprise users spend most of their time on. They're spending time in Outlook, they're spending time in Excel. We want to bring that same ease by which you can just deploy an app and extend the capabilities of those apps into existing Office application. So that's bringing the value of apps to Office and SharePoint. This is going to be cloud ready, so it's unified and cloud ready. So it means it works not only on Office 365, but also on-prem. So everything that you see today, I'm going to primarily demo using Office 365, but it'll also work on-prem. And then lastly, it's really based on web standards, right? It's all going to be HTML, JavaScript, REST, OData, OAuth. So if you are a web developer, you already have those skills, and you can just bring those into the Office and SharePoint platform. Now, an important part, the clicker is just not going to work today. Okay. An important part of any app ecosystem is this ability to have an app store, which really allows you to discover new apps, monetize them, sell them, or even ease the way in which you can deploy them and have some governance around this. The key part where Office 365 is different is really about it's not only a public store, but there's also an internal app catalog. So you don't have to get everything from the public store. There's internal app catalogs that your enterprise can have where you curate the apps that are available to your enterprise users. So that's really the kind of a quick recap of things that you probably might have already known about about building apps for Office and SharePoint. With that, let's actually first dig into apps for Office and understand the different types of apps and how they are built. So let's start off with app shapes. By app shapes, what I really mean is the way the app gets surfaced inside the Office application. You must have seen examples already on the keynote today where there was a little task pane that got showed, and that actually is the first example where you have a little task pane that sits right next to your document, whether it's Word or Excel, and extends the capability of that main application. So let's look at some examples. And these are examples that are actually in the Office store today, right? So here you have Lucidcharts, which actually is a website where you can go in and create your own custom charts. So this isn't me, but someone has gone ahead and done like a March Madness bracket, presuming that's coming up. They did it on Lucidcharts. And what Lucidcharts has is they have a task pane app for Office that you can use with your Word document, and whatever chart you created on their website, you can just pull it in and put it inside your Word document now. So that's one example. Some more canonical examples, which you get actually by default, is the Bing News example, where you're writing up a paper or a report and you need to know what's happening, what's the current events happening around a specific keyword or a specific story. You can just select the text and say, hey, Bing search on this right there in the task pane, and you get the right contextual information. In this case, it's actually Bing News search rather than just a generic website search. Another very common scenario is dictionary, right? So you can have your own inbuilt dictionary, but if you really want to understand the words or get some additional details, synonyms or whatever, you can use the Merriam-Webster dictionary to get additional details of a word by just highlighting it and saying, use my Webster app in Word. So that's task pane app. The next kind of shape is content app, where in content app, you can think of it as there's content that's sitting inside the document itself. And some examples of this are, again, a Bing Map app. And I believe we saw this in the dev keynote this morning, too, where you just simply insert a Bing Map app. You can select data that's on your Excel spreadsheet and then bind to it, and then the Bing Map can visualize that data on a map instead of like a static graphical visualization that you get out of the box from Excel. And this actually is a category of apps that's very popular in Excel. It's just visualization apps, and we'll actually see how to build one of these in the demo. Another example that you get out of the box is this people visualizer. So instead of just having graphs of people, it's just sort of a fun way to visualize people. If you've actually used the latest bits, you might have already seen this app out there. It's there by default. And then another example that's out in the store is this Bubbles visualizer, which, is showing an interacting graph of some data that it's bound to. We'll actually build this app right from scratch, where we get to visualize some data in Excel and show you how you can use plain HTML and JavaScript to create these nice Bubbles visualizer. All right. So the last kind of app is our mail apps. You can think of them as living in line with your email or an appointment. They work in Outlook or Outlook web app. And there are really two kinds now. The first one is more contextual. So for example, you get an email, and the email's from someone, and you can simply launch this app for LinkedIn, which gives you information, pulls in information about that person from LinkedIn rather than your internal Active Directory, say, right? So if you get a lot of external people's mail, you want to look them up on LinkedIn, you don't have to go out. You can just launch the app right there. The app knows the email of the person, and it looks it up on LinkedIn. So that's one example. Another very common example is FedEx package discovery. If you use Outlook, you might have already seen this, but now it's Outlook.com. As a consumer product, you might have already seen this, but it's also available for enterprises now, where you get a FedEx shipment notification right in there. FedEx has an app which lets you track the shipment in your mail rather than having to go out to a separate site. And the new thing, which you actually saw this morning in both the main keynote and the other keynote, is these Compose apps. And the example I have here is a much simplistic example than the demo you saw, which is while you're composing an app, You can simply say there's some standard templates that I have and I just want to select from those. So that's what you're seeing over here. It's like, hey, I'll have a standard template here, so I'm just going to select it and it's going to insert some text in my email that I'm composing right there. You can, of course, as you saw this morning, do complex things like connect it to a SharePoint workflow on the back end and then still insert data into the email message. So that's mail apps. That's a quick overview of the different shapes of apps we have. Now let's kind of dig into the guts of what these apps are made of. How do they actually work, right? What's the anatomy of the app for Office? So what you have is an Office application, a rich application. In this case, we are looking at Excel. And to get the app to work, it's really talking to two different components. One is the App Store or the SharePoint app catalog, and the other is the website which hosts the content of the app itself. So what happens is when you first try to launch your My Apps button in Excel there or Word, it actually goes out to your app catalog or the App Store and requests what apps are available to you, right? And when you select one of the apps that is available, it gets back an app manifest, which is nothing but an XML file which contains information about the map. It contains things like icons and, you know, description and name and stuff like that, stuff you would expect a manifest to have. One of the important things, though, is it has a URL of where the web server is located for the app. And this is the URL which has the actual content of the app. So once Excel has this manifest, it actually goes out to that web server from the URL it got from the manifest and actually gets back all the content of the app. When you get back the content, it is just a website. It is using HTML, JavaScript, and all those common web technologies. But in addition to all those, it's also using, in this case, for an app for Office, the office.js JavaScript library, which allows you to interact with the Office application that your web page got loaded into. So that's the basic structure of almost all apps for Office. It has a manifest, and it has a website which hosts the content, and the content is always using the APIs that are available to it from office.js library. And that's how you get the app for Office to show up. All right, so with that, that's a quick overview of the guts of how apps for Office works. Let's get into building one of these. For that, I'm going to switch over here. All right, so to build this one, I'm actually going to start off building it in Napa. Now, Napa is just a browser-based development tool for building apps for Office and SharePoint. And I'll talk a little bit more about it and how it compares to Visual Studio in a bit. But to get started, all you need is you need to go sign up and get a developer site. If you already have an MSDN subscription as a developer, you already get this developer tenant as one of the benefits of your MSDN subscription. And the developer tenant and developer site is pretty much like your team site, but with the difference there that you can sideload the apps that you're building onto the site. Typical team sites are actually locked down. They can't install apps from anywhere. They can only install them from the App Store or from the app catalog. But on a developer site, you can just sideload whatever apps you want. It's much like the device model you have where, you know, you have a developer device and you can just sideload any apps. So here I have my developer site, and to access Napa, I just have to click this first button, build an app. And the very first time you do that, it'll actually redirect you to a store and tell you to install Napa on your developer site. Well, as it turns out, Napa itself is an app available in the store which lets you build more apps that you can put on the store. So it's kind of nice and cyclical. Right, so the very first time, you'll be asked to install the app on your developer site. Once you have done that, you can just come back here and click on this button, which I've already done, and it'll take you straight to Napa. So the first time in, you'll be prompted with this question of which kind of app you want to build. You can build the app for SharePoint, which we'll talk about in a bit, but you can also build the different shapes for the apps for Office out there. So for this, I'm actually going to build a content app for Office. Let's just call it Content App 1. And we actually provide you with different templates. There's a basic app template, which kind of gives you the getting started code. There's also a visualization app which is really focused on all those visualization scenarios that we saw, because we are seeing a lot of the apps in the marketplace are really following that pattern. So we made it really easy for you to bootstrap that process and just provided you a visualization app template. But to keep it simple and to kind of explain how we build these apps, I'm going to start off with the basic app and actually convert it to a visualization app. All right? So let's hit create. And it's created all these files for me. It's pretty much, if you've used Visual Studio, it's pretty much the same Visual Studio experience where you have a solution explorer with some files. That's your project. And then you have a code editor on the right with code highlighting and a bunch of other capabilities. So I'll kind of take a look at the code in a little bit. But let's explore the IDE or the website a little bit. Over here, we allow you to, of course, browse different files, search across files, basic capabilities that you would expect out of a developer tool. And then there's a properties window here. This is where we actually let you set the properties on the manifest. For example, the name, the description, the icon, those things. Right? So the first thing I actually want to do is, sure, this is a starter template. Let's see what happens when I actually run this thing. Right? I can just directly run this project that I have in my browser and see what it creates. What we are doing now is, because this is a developer side, we're actually sideloading this source code that we have for the app. We're just packaging it up and sideloading it onto your developer side. And since this is an app for Excel, we launched the Excel web app. And right in the Excel web app, here's our first app that's running inside the browser. Right? So you had nothing to install. You were all in the browser. All you did is sign up, got a developer site, installed Napa, created the project, and you got some sample code running for your first app. All right, so let's look at this app. It's really a simple welcome example. You know, it's like, hello world. I can type some data in here in Excel, select it, and when I say get selected data, oh, the app says, you selected hello world. Well, it's just a starter template, right? But it shows you the basic interactions that most of these apps are going to do. It's the app that's running inside that little frame out here, and it's data that's sitting in your Office document, whether it's Excel or Word or PowerPoint. And the app needs to get access to the data so that it can do something with it, like visualize it in this case. So what we'll do now is we'll actually take this basic template and create a nice visualization app out of it. And to visualize data, let's pick stock data. You know, Excel deals with a lot of financial information, so it's not going to be as complex as one of those. But let's just imagine that you have some stock symbols stored inside your Excel file, and you want to visualize the latest data on the stock prices of those stock symbols, right? Because this is an app and a website, it doesn't have to be static data. You can actually go and pull out the real-time data of what is the stock price right now and show that as a visualization in the Excel app. So let's build that. To do that, I need a couple of things. I need something to visualize the libraries. For that, I'm going to use this open source JavaScript library called Processing.js. So it's available on processingjs.org, and they already have this nice sample over here, which is very similar to what we want to build. It's creating these bubbles. What they're doing is they're reading some Spanish text, and they're counting the number of letters occurring together. And the more occurrences of the letters that occur together, the larger the bubble. So we can use this as a sample and say, oh, instead of visualizing this text, I actually want to visualize stock data where I read a symbol from Excel, and I query some service, which gives me the current stock price information. And the larger the stock price, the larger the bubble, right? So simple. All right, and then the nice thing about this library is, okay, it's creating these bubbles, but they're nice and interactive. And it's actually quite powerful, even I haven't fully played with the Processing.js library. You know, so it's a great thing to go play around with. All right, so let's kind of get back and look at what the code actually looks like, right? We kind of skipped over that earlier. So here's my main page. Here's the main page of the application that we saw, which had the Get Selected Data button. And there's a bunch of code that we've already added there. Most of it is just libraries which we think are going to help you make some productive, write some productive code, like jQuery or Microsoft Ajax. The most important one is this office.js library, which is the library which provides all the Office SDKs that I talked about earlier, all the Office APIs that I talked about earlier. And you'll just notice, as of this morning, if you ever have used this before, we are now on version 1.1. Last year, we were on 1.0, which gave you some capabilities. With 1.1, we are actually adding new capabilities, so all the new Outlook Compose capabilities that you saw are now on 1.1. So if you want to use those, just use that reference, the 1.1 capability. All right, so that's my script references, and there's some code here which is actually doing the welcome. It's just plain old HTML. I actually don't need it, so I'm just going to delete it. And then I do need the Get Selected Data button. I'm actually going to use it to copy my data over, so I'll keep that there. I don't need any additional samples and stuff, so I'm just going to delete all that too. So the first thing I'm going to do next is, the next thing I'm going to do is include that processing library and the sample that we saw into my project. If that library was available on a CDN location, I could have just pointed to it directly, but it's not, much like the way we do with the Office.js library. But I've downloaded it previously, and I can just drag and drop it, here's the library, to my scripts folder here. So it updates that, and I also need this bubbles.txt file, that I can drag and drop to the scripts folder. Great, so I've updated my project by simply adding those files over there. Now I can start updating my HTML and add references to that JS library that I just created. So I can just say script source ... scripts, and hopefully I get this right. Processing, I always misspell it, JS, and then script completion. So as you saw me typing, you actually saw some of the benefits that you get out of the editor too. It does all the tag completions, the code completions. So it's a very nice and powerful editor that you get just directly in the browser, right? Which is a great tool. You don't have to get a rich client to get this editing experience. All right, I've added processing JS. What I want to do next is actually draw a canvas where I can draw the bubbles, right? For that, since you don't have to watch me write all the code, I am just going to copy paste some of it from my little helper here. And all that is a little div which has the canvas in there, and this is where I'm going to put those bubbles once I have the data that I need. All right, so the next step is I need the data. I need to query some service so that I can say what's the current stock price for the symbols that I have just read in from Excel. For that, I'm going to go to my JavaScript file and start looking at what's in there. And for the actual service itself, I'm going to use Yahoo APIs, mostly because they don't require a dev key so that I can just share it with all you guys without you guys getting access to my personal developer key. Right, so it's just a convenient thing. So let's look at what code already exists in the template and how we can change it. One of the most interesting things about the Office API is this Office initialize function, and that's something that all apps need to have. This is what tells your JavaScript code that's running in the context of the app that the Office application itself is actually ready to interact with the app. So if you've done any HTML programming, or use jQuery, it's very similar to the document ready function. In fact, you'll see that we actually nest both those functions together. The Office initialize and the document ready kind of just go together here. So this is where you write all the code that is needed to initialize your app. And all it's really doing over there is it's setting a click handler on that button so that when I click on it, it'll actually go read the data from Excel, and right now it's just showing it back up. So let's look at what the read data function looks like. It's calling some Office APIs. These are the APIs that are available to you through that office.js library, right? So it's office context document get selected data async. It's an async operation, so it's just going to fire the event, and then you have to wait for it to come back. It's not going to stop interacting. It's not going to stop the user from interacting with the app while that data comes back, right? So, and then this operation takes a few parameters. The first one is, what kind of data am I reading in? By default, over here, it's the coercion type was set to text because I was just simply reading in one cell of data. But now I actually want to read like a block of data of multiple stock symbols, right? So I want to change that text, and I can hit dot again, And I actually get IntelliSense, again, right there in the browser for the Office APIs, right? So you can actually play around with this and you can get access, you can play around with the APIs and learn those APIs just right here in the browser. All right, so I want to use, say, Matrix because I can then read and write any random sets of columns here. And then the next call is actually the callback from the async call, which is where I actually get some data back from Excel. Right now, it's just saying, show notification, the selected text was foo, right? So instead of that, I need to replace it and say, no, when I get the selected text, make a call to the Yahoo web service and actually get me the stock price for those symbols. All right, so once again for that, good old copy-paste. All right, so a little bit more code there. But all it's really doing is using jQuery to make a call out to the Yahoo APIs, and whatever stock information it gets back, whatever is the current price, it's storing it in this variable called values. Now, the editor is actually being helpful and telling me I made a mistake and I did not define values anywhere, which I was supposed to. So let's go ahead and define that. Var values. And it's just an array. And this is the variable I'm going to store all my stock information in, the stock symbol and the price information. Once I've done that at the top, oh, good enough. The underscore values, the little squiggly line under the underscore values went away, so I've fixed that. It's still showing me a little error over here. Show canvas is not defined. So what this is about is once I actually get back the data, I just have the data and I've stored it in an array. I actually want to visualize it. I want to show the canvas. So I need to call the show canvas function. I need to define it. A little note there, you'll also see that there's a little underscore values, and I have put in an array which defines the predefined values. Only reason I do that is because there's a limit on the number of times you can query the Yahoo API because it's public, and I've been testing it out quite often, so it might at times not return the right value. So in case that fails, I have this fallback with the cache, right? So let's define the show canvas function. And for that, I'm going to type a few things and show you actually a nice snippet functionality that we also have in the editor, where I can just say, select the function snippet, and it does enter the rest for me, and I can just define a show canvas name. It doesn't accept any parameters, and I'm ready to write my actual code. All right, so for the actual code, which is also very small, but I'll rather copy paste it. All I'm really doing is I am getting the canvas div that I defined earlier and saying, change the visibility on it, show it, and then call the processing library, and let's create those bubbles. All right, I think that's pretty much all I need for it. Let's see what happens if I hit run again. All right, this time around, it should be a little quicker to run it because we recognize that I've only changed a few files, so it just updates those files, launches up Excel again, and maybe not. Oh, no, there it is. All right, so there's the get selected data function. I got rid of the other welcome text in there, so that's why there's just the button there. Let's put in some symbols here. Let's say Microsoft, Yahoo, because I'm using their APIs. Let's also put in Facebook, just to see if that works, right? So I've selected the data there, and now when I hit get selected data, oh, yes, it worked, right? So this is the real data that we got from the Yahoo service, and we populated those buttons right there in Excel. And that's actually really real data. Microsoft is apparently at 3780. So Facebook's apparently doing much better, so that's why it has a bigger circle. But anyway, that's how we kind of start building these apps for Office by simply using standard HTML, JavaScript, those are web standards, and then integrating it with office.js, which is the JavaScript SDK that's available to you. So I went through a lot of code here. There's a couple of other things that I wanted to show you, but rather than do that, what I'll do is there's this nice functionality in Napa where I can simply share the project with you, right? So this isn't exactly the same project I've written, but one of the buttons in Napa is saying share project, And whatever code I wrote out there, it's now just shared out with you at that URL. So you can just go hit it up, and you can actually just view it on your browser or on your device. If you don't have an account, you can just view the code. But if you do have an account, and by account, I mean the Office developer subscription with NAPA installed on it, you can actually just copy the project over to your NAPA tenant and run it on your tenant, right? So it's a great way of actually sharing samples, getting code samples. You'll actually notice a lot of MSDN documentation up there that's using the same technology to share the code samples we have with you. So nothing to install, just click on the link and run it right there in the browser. And that's kind of the benefit of NAPA. So I'll talk a little bit about how you can think about NAPA and Visual Studio, right? Because after all, I actually am part of Visual Studio, and NAPA is part of that Visual Studio suite of things. So you can think of NAPA as a complementary tool to Visual Studio. You can get started in NAPA and then continue on in Visual Studio. One of the things I didn't show you here is you can actually create the project that we just started off in NAPA and then just click the Open in Visual Studio button. And if you don't have Visual Studio, it'll install Visual Studio for you with the right set of prerequisites and get the same project that you had in NAPA in Visual Studio so that you can continue working on it. So an easy way to think of it is it's like a free express queue for Visual Studio, which doesn't require you to install anything. All you need is a dev site, and you can start creating these apps for Office and SharePoint. So with that, I am going to minimize this here and move on to our second topic, which is apps for SharePoint. Let's look at what app shapes exist for apps for SharePoint. You have the standard full-page app for SharePoint, which essentially takes up the entire screen. You just launch it from SharePoint. It shows up in your site collections list, and it owns the entire real estate on your browser window when it's running, right? So that's your full-page app. Some examples of this is Adlib had the PDF publisher. The other example you saw this morning at the dev keynote was the CAD drawing, which was a full-page app. NAPA itself that you saw right now is actually an app, as I mentioned earlier. So all these are just full-page apps that when you install on SharePoint, you can launch them and they can get access to all the SharePoint resources and through the APIs that are available to you as part of being an app. All right, next on the list is Parts. And if you did like SharePoint solution development, it's the client web part. This is a similar concept, but since it's part of an app, it's actually called an app part. And the canonical example here is the weather icon there. So you can just go insert a weather app part on any of your team collection sites. That's another app that's out there in the marketplace. Apparently, that has the highest number of downloads, I believe. At least it used to. So app parts, not full screens. They just show up in little sections on the main SharePoint page. You have other extensions. That's how you add an app part to your screen. I missed this page there. The last part is you have UI command extensions, which let you add new commands to the ribbon and to the item menus. And examples of this are actually this is Nintex Workflow Management, which lets you add a little ribbon icon to the timeline view of an existing list. So those are just the different shapes. Let's look into the anatomy of a SharePoint app. And again, this is very similar to what we saw with an Office app. The only difference being, instead of having an Office-rich client, you actually are running inside a browser, right? There's no client involved over here. So your browser that's talking to SharePoint as well as to the App Store, when you actually launch an app, this time around, it's actually SharePoint that goes to the App Store and gets information. In this case, it's the manifest again, which contains information about the app, like name, data, stuff like that, and also the URL from where it can actually go get the content for the app. Once it has that URL, it simply redirects the browser to that page on the website so that you can directly access the content. But because the website was launched in the context of a SharePoint app, it gets access to all the SharePoint data that you provided, that you consented to giving it access to. Right? So much like what you saw with Office.js, because this was an app for SharePoint, you now get access to SP.js if you are writing in JavaScript. Or with SharePoint, you also get the .NET APIs, and you can just query your SharePoint properties like your username, lists on the host web, and things like that. So with that, let's actually dig into a demo and start talking about building your first app for SharePoint. For this, I'm going to switch back to Visual Studio. These are the latest bits that we just released this morning. So you can go get them. There's a URL at the end of this presentation where you can go get it from. But what I'll do now is just create a new project. I'll start off with an app for SharePoint. And VS is going to give me three options: provider-hosted, auto-hosted, or SharePoint-hosted. Let's start off with the SharePoint-hosted one. That's the simplest to explain. All that's saying is your code, your content for your app is actually going to live on the SharePoint site itself. The only restriction here is you can't have any server code, right? It has to be client-only code. And one of the reasons for this is you don't want to overwhelm the main SharePoint server by running code on it, right? That's the key differentiator we had between kind of the traditional creating SharePoint solutions versus the new cloud app model. I think we saw that in the dev keynote this morning where we wanted to loosely couple your app and the main SharePoint. And that's why if you do host it on SharePoint, there's no server code you're running. It's all client-only code, so any logic that you're running is actually running on the client's browser, and SharePoint is just serving up those pages. All right, so that's SharePoint hosted, and the other two are provider hosted and auto hosted, both of which are you can write server code. Provider hosted is bring your own server. We prefer if it's Azure, but it can be whatever. Auto hosted is essentially Office 365 will provision a site for you. So it really is solving the problem of you don't want to go provision a site, you don't want to get an IIS server, you could choose the auto-hosted approach. The only caveat there is auto-hosted is still in preview, so don't take production apps and put them up on auto-hosted. Right? So that's the only caveat to remember there. Let's build the first provider-hosted app. I actually have a list of dev sites here, and I'm actually going to use the same one that we used with Napa and hit next. What you get here is a choice of which kind of application you want to build. Remember, this is just web technologies, right? And VS has great tools in ASP.NET Web Forms or ASP.NET MVC, which allow you to build web sites and web applications. So even though you're building an app for SharePoint, it's just creating a web app. We give you the same option. Which template do you want to use? Do you want to use MVC or do you want to use web forms? Let's pick MVC and hit enter. It's going to actually ask me to log in to my dev tenant there. And if this works right, yes, it did. You don't have to see me type that. OK, good. So once it's created the project, you'll actually notice that you get a website project, so this is the MVC.NET website project. Let's open up Solution Explorer here. And then the actual SharePoint project, which contains the manifest, which we talked about in the anatomy slide. So this is the manifest that's going to point to the web project, and that's how SharePoint knows where to go look for the web content. So since this is an MVC project, what we've actually done is we've pre-wired some views and models for you to actually start using the SharePoint APIs. And right over here, we actually have this index page that is calling into some SharePoint API to get the current user that's logged in. It creates a client context because it needs to know which context the user is running in. And eventually, it creates this property called viewBag.username, which is actually filled with the title of the current user that's logged in. So it's just a nice way to kind of get you started showing you how you can start using the SharePoint API inside an MVC project. So when I hit run, what should happen is it should get my username from SharePoint and say a little welcome to me as I open up the app. All right, so it's installed the app on my dev site. I need to log in again. This time around, it's going to ask me whether I trust this app. Yes, I do. And it's now redirecting from SharePoint back to the app. Since I'm actually running this in VS, you'll notice this is running on localhost. And sure enough, this is the standard MVC template, but it actually got my name from SharePoint, because that's what my name was, my display name in SharePoint, and it's actually showing me that in an MVC app. So let's do something interesting with this. Kind of in the spirit of kind of creating these mashups, you have information that you're getting from Office, you have information that you're getting from SharePoint. You can mash it up with information that you get from your own service, if you have one, or some other service that you have, if it's out there. So what I thought I'd do is, I'll actually take my username that I got from SharePoint and query some other service, Flickr, for example, and search for all pictures that are up on Flickr with my name on it, right? And hopefully there's nothing scandalous there. All right, so let's do that. So here's my name. I already have it as a ViewBag username property, so I don't have to make another call to SharePoint. What I'll do is I'll go to the to my view, which is the index.html page, and this is where I'm actually, this is the view that we saw, which had the welcome, and this is where it had viewbag.username, which was my name right over there. I'll change this so that it actually queries, let's change this button here, instead of getting learn more, I'll actually just say query Flickr. And because we are in VS, VS has a nice little way of just dragging and dropping code. All right, so let me minimize that. Oh. All I'm doing here is I added a button here which calls a JavaScript function, get Flickr, and passes it my username that I got from the SharePoint API call. So now I actually need to write the JavaScript which takes that username and makes a call out to Flickr. All right. So for that, I'm just going to clean a little bit of this up. I don't need the sample text that was in there. Oop, let's minimize that again. I don't think I need that. And then drag and drop another div. All right, so all I did here is I put in a div. This is where I'm going to store all my Flickr images. And this is the JavaScript function which takes the username, makes a call out to Flickr. Again, the choice was Flickr was simply motivated by I don't need a dev key for it, so I can just share this with you guys. And then whatever results I get back from Flickr, I'm just putting it all back using Java, using jQuery as a div and an image source back on my page. So this time around, when I run it, it's again going to go through a process a little faster because the app was already installed. It does want me to log in, though. It'll redirect me back to localhost and to the same page that we were looking at. But the sample content is gone. I have this little Get Flickr Images button. And let's see what happens if I do that. OK, good enough. It got some pictures. And nothing scandalous there. That's good. So you can actually see some sample pictures from last night and this morning, which didn't turn out too well on the keynote from this morning. But that's another example of how you can just use the standard web technologies to get data from SharePoint and then hook it up to your service. In these examples I showed you, it was really third-party APIs that are out there, and they are free, so I could easily show them to you. But you can easily imagine if you have existing APIs in your enterprise, or if you're an ISV creating these solutions, you can just expose out these APIs and create apps that use both SharePoint and your own Office APIs and create compelling mashed up experiences with these apps. All right, with that, we are done with two of three of the app types. Let's switch back here. Next, what I would like to talk about is actually this thing called cloud business apps. And you saw a little bit of this morning. Cloud business apps, if you've used Visual Studio and the apps for developing apps for SharePoint and Office, is a new template that we introduced around last October, I believe. And the idea behind it is really, it's a nice way of rapidly creating these prescriptive apps that connect with external data sources, connect with Office resources like Link or Person or Presence information that you get from Link. And you don't have to bother writing all the plumbing code that you would typically would in creating these apps for SharePoint from scratch. So you can think of it as a RAD, if I can use the word, Rapid Application Development Model, of a RAD tool for creating apps for SharePoint that follow a pattern that run on SharePoint, that run on mobile devices, and that use data from SharePoint as well as from other external data sources. So with that, let's just actually, the best way to describe it is to demo it, right? So let's switch back. All right, I'm going to go File, New Project once again. And so here's the apps node in Visual Studio, and this is the Cloud Business App template that I'm going to create now. It's going to ask me which dev site I want. I'm going to actually use a different dev site here. And it really is motivated by the scenario I'm interested in. So let me close everything out. So to show this app demo, I'll actually... you can imagine a scenario, let's log in here, where here's a team site, and it's really, imagine Contoso HR department is running a recruiting program, and they don't really have a nice app that manages the recruiting, so they're just using SharePoint to, you know, track what open job positions they have. So here you have a simple list that says, oh, here's a bunch of open positions we have. We know the hiring manager, but that's pretty much it, right? It's very basic. It's like they don't have time to spend on an app to figure out how to manage this process better. With a cloud business app, you can actually very quickly create a nice app around this existing data, connect it with additional data sources if you may have, and add your own business logic in there. So let's see how you can do that. So I already have data, which is my job postings data. I need to start tracking candidates that are going to apply for those job postings, right? So I'll switch back to my VS template that I created out here. Let's see. And then I get two options, create new table or attach to an external data source. I'm going to start creating a new table for job candidates. Oh, candidate, did I spell that right? Okay, let's give the candidate a name, email, phone, and let's say interview date, right? I can do things like, hey, it's a phone number, so instead of a string, why not just call it a phone number? It's an email, let's just call it an email, and then the interview date is actually a date, but it's also optional. You don't have to have an interview in order to have a candidate. Right, so what I did there is, instead of working with these basic, you know, database concepts of strings and dates and integers, there's this higher level concept of business types where I know it's an email address, so why not just call it that? And then by default, we give you things like validation. So when you create a screen, you type in some information for our email, it's going to check, is it actually in an email format? Does it have an @ and a dot domain at the end? If it doesn't, it'll actually say, hey, it's invalid. It needs to be an email. So it's really simple things like that. Now that I've created my job candidate, I actually need to associate it with the list I had up on SharePoint. So for that, I'm going to say attach to an external data source, select SharePoint, and I already have it pre-configured, so hit next. Let's log in again. We are very concerned about security. That's why we make you log in. That's what it is. So now VS is actually going to go pull and get all the lists that are available on my SharePoint site. I was interested in the job postings list, so I'll just pull that down. And sure enough, it's pulled down the job postings list. It has title, description, hiring manager. Let me just pull the hiring manager up here so that it gets kind of highlighted and bubbled up there. So I have two disconnected data sources now, but I want to actually connect the two, right? I have job postings. I can say, create this relationship with the job candidate that I just created in my app. And I can go one job posting can have many job candidates. That seems right. Yep. All right. And it, sure enough, created this dotted line here, which actually says it's a virtual relationship because it's actually going across multiple data sources. So it's not a real relationship in the database sense, but it's constructing that in a virtual sense. All right. Now that I have defined my data, which is job candidates and job positions, I actually want to define a few screens. So let's see. I think I accidentally closed one of the windows that I wanted. Let's get that back up. Yep, here's my Solution Explorer window. And I can just go right-click, add a screen. And what we give you is these common screen templates where you can, you're working with data, so you want to browse data, add data, edit it, or you know, view specific details without editing it. Or you want to do all of the above, so I'm just going to select this common screen set, which is essentially all of the above, on the job candidates list first. So, all right, when I hit OK, it's actually going to create a bunch of screens for me out here. And it'll pull up this little designer view that we have, which is essentially just like a DOM view if you've done any HTML development, where instead of working with you know, the actual code and CSS, we just give you a tree structure that says, you know, here's the top level layout, it's got two rows, and it's going to show you this data in a tile list. And we manage the rest of the resizing, the HTML and JavaScript for you. So I've created this job candidates list. I can go in and now create another set of screens for the job postings themselves. And because job postings and job candidates are related, I can actually associate them and select job candidates also. So it goes ahead and creates those bunch of screens there. All right, so I have my data, I have my screens, I should be able to run this app and see something. Let's see what it looks like. Since this is an app for SharePoint, it's actually going to go and, again, do the same thing that we saw with the MVC app, install the app on the SharePoint dev site that I had up running. And it might ask me to log in again. And because it's the first time, it asks me to trust the app. I do, because I am developing it. And here, again, you get the job candidate screen. So because job candidates is a new table that I just added, there's no items in there. But I can look at job postings, and it's going to pull in all the job postings that I had from the list, hopefully. Oh, there it is. On SharePoint. And you'll notice it actually is following the same conventions that SharePoint has, right? So hiring manager was a person on SharePoint. Sure enough, Jay shows up as a person in my app itself. I can click in and get details, and it can also show you who the last modified by person was. In this case, it was me, and then I can even get the link contact presence card in there. So it's very much like the experience you would expect in SharePoint, but now it's just part of your app. And you get to control the scenarios for your app. All right, so what I wanted to do is actually add a little job candidate here. I'm going to pick on one of my colleagues who is not here. If you know him, Mike's worked on SharePoint tooling for a long while. And that is not his number. So that's my candidate. I need to associate it with a job posting, so I just click on that list, and again, this is the list from SharePoint. Let's say Program Manager, and hit Save, and sure enough, it actually created a candidate. So I can go back to my job postings list, look at the Program Manager job, and then when I click on Job Candidates, there's the candidate that I just created. So it's a nice way of just easily integrating different and disparate sources in a very rad manner. You don't have to write any code to get so far. But there are some things where you actually do want to write code on, right? There's logic, there's business logic. For example, I added the little interview date there for job candidates, right? So I want to make sure, let's go back to job candidates. When I'm adding a candidate, interview date's out here. I don't want to be able to set this interview date. Only specific people actually are allowed to set this interview date, right? People from HR, for example. So I need to write some business logic in my app to actually make that happen. Well, we made it really easy for you to write that business logic. So let's go back to my job candidate table that I created earlier. And over here, we actually have this dropdown for you for write code, which gives you these interesting hooks in the whole, you can think of it as the safe pipeline where your data is getting saved to a database. And you can run functions like, hey, validate my data before it actually gets saved. Or when you're inserting the data, write some additional business logic in there so that when I insert, say, for example, in the order and the order details, I actually add up the total and make sure that it's correct and things like that, right? So it's a nice way that we've provided you with hooks in that safe pipeline to write your code. You don't have to worry about the other code, but the business logic that you do care about, you can just go right in one of these methods that we have. So I'm going to use the job candidates validate method, which essentially is going to run every time I make an edit or insert a new job candidate there. And over here, I want to write some logic, which I'm going to rely on my toolbox here, to validate the candidate and make sure that the person making the change is actually from a specific department. So the API call I'm making actually out here is like, if you set the interview date, if it's not null, and the current user's department is not HR, I'm going to block you from trying to make an edit, right? So only people from HR are actually going to be able to edit this, set the interview date. So what this shows you is the user department information, we actually got that from Active Directory, right? And it's just available to you directly. So the user's identity flew through because this was a SharePoint app, and we can query that identity and get the Active Directory information right from the APIs that are available to the app. So you don't have to go hook them all up. It's just available to you. All right, so let's try this. I'm going to run this. And it's going to show it up again. Make me log in. That's my job candidate screen. That's the job candidate I just added. Let's add another one. Let's just call it John Smith. And all right. And let's say job position. SDE. All right. I'm going to try and set an interview date. Let's say March 3rd today. And try and hit save. At this point, my logic should run and actually gave me an error saying, hey, you can't save. My current department is engineering. Sorry, I can't mess around with the interview date, right? So another nice way of saying, you care about the business logic as a developer, just write your business logic, and then you can use our tools to build out the rest of the app and focus on the code that you do care about. Since it's running in VS, you actually get access to all the VS tools you have for your code. So it's not just specific hooks. It's all HTML and JavaScript, so you can write whatever business logic you want over there. All right, so that's a quick overview of building these three different kinds of apps. We looked at apps for SharePoint, apps for Office, and cloud business apps. Let's get on to the next step. Once you've built these apps out, you want to get them out, right? You actually want to get them to end users, and that's all about publishing, right? So publishing is really about you as a developer wanting to get to the end user. And as we've mentioned earlier, too, there's really two pathways. There's the Office Store, which is the public pathway, and the app catalog, which is the internal pathway. Let's look at both those in a little more detail, at least through some funny animations. So to get to the Office store, you have to go through a DevCenter submission. If you've done any of the store submissions for the device apps, it's pretty much the same. You submit your app to the store, it gets approved, and then you can, depending on the licensing model you choose, you can either push it as a trial, free, or have users purchase it, and then it's available to end users through the Office Store capabilities inside either the rich client or through SharePoint. The next scenario is really about where you, which you can think of it as a direct scenario, where you are part of an enterprise or you're a vendor trying to sell to an enterprise. And instead of going to the Office Store, you actually go to the IT admin of that enterprise, and they can put it up on the SharePoint app catalog, and from there, it again makes it to that integrated app catalog that's available in SharePoint as well as the rich clients, right? So two common flows. There's a third interesting one where there can be an app in the Office Store, and end users can actually request their admins to say, hey, actually, this app that's in the main store, I really want this app, and can you please bring it into our internal app catalog? And so they can go in and make a request for that app, and then IT admins can say, okay, fine, we'll make it available to you and bring it to the app catalog. And end users can then get the app through the app catalog rather than going through the main store. So that's the end-to-end flow. What does it look like for a developer to actually go through that? What are the bits that you're going to push out? So for the apps that we built, the provider-hosted MVC app or even the cloud business app, they need to go out to two places, right? The store or the app catalog and the website. And this is just a picture of that. The top portion is that .app package, which goes to the Office Store or to the app catalog. This is the thing that you would hand off to an IT admin if you're doing the direct flow, or this is the thing that you would submit to the developer submission if you're going to the Office Store. And the next set of files is really just a web deploy package. So if you've done any web development, one of the options you have available to you is just creating a web deploy package that you can just deploy and push it onto IIS or to Azure websites, wherever you want, essentially. So those are the two components that you're dealing with and pushing out to different sites. For the app catalog, what it is it's just another SharePoint site that the IT admin is going to. And in there, you get three lists. One for apps for Office, one for apps for SharePoint, and then the third is for that third flow where users can come in and make requests for apps that are in the public store and bring them into the app catalog. So that's what you're seeing out here. Your IT admin can go set up this app catalog site, and once they have, they get the three options, and it literally is a list, right? So that's the next screenshot here. Apps or SharePoint, you just drag and drop that app package. If you're an IT admin, it's usually locked down, so it's not something developers tend to do. Just drag and drop that to the app for SharePoint list, and it's available to everyone on your enterprise SharePoint tenant. So that's how easy it is to get your apps to end users. Just push out the app package. All right, that kind of brings us towards the end of the talk, and let's do a quick wrap-up. We looked at the new cloud app model, and we built some interesting apps, which hopefully gave you some good ideas on how you can go about building these apps for Office, SharePoint, and cloud business apps. Once we built them, we looked at the publishing flow. We didn't actually go through the flow, but it's a pretty simple flow of getting it to the app catalog or to the Office Store once you have the working bits, right? And the key takeaways that I hope you really got is the value of apps that you see in devices is now available in Office and SharePoint, and they are all built using web standards. Throughout the talk, we just use open source JavaScript libraries, standard web technologies available to you in Visual Studio. And of course, we also have great tooling for you in Visual Studio, either through the main Visual Studio IDE itself or through its browser companion called Napa, which is again available to you for free. And then finally, we talked about publishing. So with that, I'll kind of end it at, since you're all at SharePoint Conference and you have the product team here, the developer tools team, it's a great opportunity to give us feedback. And you can talk to members of our team. We have, that shows up. We have Kelly somewhere at the back there. You can either go right there. You can either go talk to him if you have feedback about our tools, or you can just email us at bsdr@microsoft.com, because we would like to hear your input about how you're using our tools and what kind of apps you're building. So this is a great opportunity to come talk to us about that. And then finally, here's a list of other sessions. This was sort of the getting started, get you going talk. If you really want to get into deeper concepts of what it is to build these apps for SharePoint, what it is to build these cloud business apps, then you can go to these additional sessions coming up Tuesday and Wednesday. All right, and the last call to action, I guess you can't really see the URL, is Napa is available out there. Go to dev.office.com or use your MSDN subscription if you have one. Try it out. Visual Studio just released a new bits this morning, and they are available to you to try out all the demos that you saw at this talk. So that's the final call to action. Go download our tools and try building some apps and tell us what you feel. All right, with that, I'm going to end it. The mandatory evaluation slides. Remember, the slide's mandatory, but the evaluations are optional. So only if you like the talk, you can go fill it out. Just a little joke there. But we finished a couple of minutes early, so if you have any questions, I'm right here. All right, thank you.